Welcome to New World Notes, hosted by Kenneth Doust. This week, some personal reflections by one of America's most interesting prophets, Michael Ruppert. Some dismiss him as a prophet of doom. That doesn't mean he's wrong. I hope you'll stay tuned. I've always been fond of modern prophets. By prophets, I mean intellectuals who examine what is going on and then tell the truth to the public. Prophets expose the lies and the crimes of the society's rulers. Prophets inform us that the system is not working. To say the least, this is never a good career move, and prophets can count on being marginalized and mocked and dismissed, or worse. But I've always been fond of prophets, and we've had a few on this show. Helen Caldicott, Noam Chomsky, Michael Parenti, Glenn Ford, Chris Hedges. A prophet we haven't heard much is Michael Ruppert. He lacks the formal academic training of, say, Professor Chomsky, or Dr. Parenti, or Master of Divinity Hedges. Ruppert was a narcotics cop in Los Angeles. His police career ended about the time he became a whistleblower. He charged that the CIA was involved in selling narcotics in the ghettos of Los Angeles, and the Los Angeles Police Department was aiding and abetting them. Later investigations confirmed much of what he said. But whistleblowing was not a good career move for Ruppert. Afterwards, he became an independent journalist, newsletter publisher, and public speaker. He is not a salaried employee of any established institution. As of 2009, he was behind on his rent. So his formal credentials are a bit iffy. Even so, he has been among the first to expose many crimes and crises, and I think he's been right on every major point. He was among the very first to warn of CIA drug dealing in the U.S. Check. He was among the first to warn of peak oil. Check. And well before 2008, he was warning us that the global financial system was on the brink of collapse. Check yet again. I think we can agree that over the next several decades, supplies of oil are going to decline. Demand for oil will continue to rise, and the price of oil will go up, up, up. Now, our entire way of life, including our agriculture, is all incredibly dependent on abundant, cheap oil and natural gas. So is the world financial system. And the financial system has additional severe problems of its own. Maintaining the status quo is simply not a long-term option. We can plunge into chaos, or we can start planning a sensible transition to a different style of civilization. Michael Ruppert has some thoughts about what we can do to weather the transition. His words are from 2009, and they're taken from a film, so there is background music. There's some now. Michael Ruppert.
Things don't break up, they break down. When a government collapses, what happens? The mail stops getting delivered. Air traffic controllers don't get paid, so they don't go to work, which means planes don't fly. Bridges and highway inspections don't get made. Food and Drug Administration inspections don't get made. Maintenance is going to be defrayed. Law enforcement stops working. I mean, it's no secret now. You see the headlines every day. California's bankrupt. Michigan's bankrupt. Ohio's. They're shutting down services left and right. There are tent cities springing up all over the country. There are homeless, displaced people. A great many billionaires, who we would call the elites, a great many very, very wealthy people, are getting crashed, burned, and eaten alive. What you don't hear is the fact that all over the world, economies are collapsing much faster than the U.S. economy. Britain is an absolute basket case. There is a curtain of despair descending across Eastern Europe. There's a revolution underway in Greece. It's not riots. It's not civil unrest. It's a revolution. Drug violence right across the border in Mexico. This is all part of the collapse. Pakistan, Afghanistan, there's lots of violence. The people who have run the planet to this point and who are running the planet now are losing control. So if you know anything about Darwinism, basically what it said was is that those species that had evolved or were able to adapt to changing circumstances were the ones that survived, and those that were not equipped or had become evolutionary dead ends were destined to die. Mike, you better be careful. It sounds like you're advocating social Darwinism. I'm not advocating social Darwinism. I am witnessing actual Darwinism. If you're in a camp with a bunch of campers and a bear attacks, you don't have to be faster than the bear. You only have to be faster than the slowest camper. I think it's a mistake to ask if people, and make all people the same as one entity, if they will understand it. I don't care if all people understand it. When you're faced with an overwhelming life-threatening crisis, as in the Titanic being hit by an iceberg, and you happen to be aware before anybody else is that the ship is going to sink and there aren't enough lifeboats, and you know how to build lifeboats, and you try to deal with that in however long the Titanic had before it went down, you're likely to run across three types of passenger on the Titanic. You'll run across a type that's basically deer in the headlights. Ship's been hit. What does that mean? What do I do? I don't know what to do. I don't know where to go. Should I do that? I don't know. That's one group. There's another group that says, we get that the ship's going to sink. We get that we're all going to die unless we make some lifeboats and do it fast. Show us what to do. And then you have a third group that says, this is the Titanic. It's absolutely unsinkable. Unsinkable. And so we're going back to the bar for a drink, and all you doomsday sayers can actually just take a hike. Now, if you're the one who knows how to build lifeboats, which group of people are you going to help? Certain things are inevitable right now. FDIC insolvency, I will tell you, is coming. Insolvency of the Federal Reserve is coming. Federal Reserve can go bankrupt. T-bill defaults. We're looking at, major bankruptcy, starvation, dislocation. All these things are already on the way. Everything is going to break down differently in different places. The best that I can do is give you some ideas of some markers that are going to come. The bumpy plateau has been described by peak oil activists and researchers for many, many years, and it's actually happening. Basically, you come up the growth curve of oil prices, and the oil prices go up until you start running out of oil. Then what happens is you have to destroy demand, which is what's happening with this collapse. Demand gets destroyed. The price of oil drops. But as you start a recovery, you start back up again, and you collide again with the finite oil and the rising energy prices, which shuts everything down again. This is the bumpy plateau. I think it's fairly certain that the mortal blow to human industrialized civilization will happen when oil prices spike again and nobody can afford to buy that oil, and everything will just shut down. The collapse must happen fast in order to leave infrastructure standing. We've all heard the stories about infrastructure, you know, the sewers and the bridges and the roads and all that. Well, the point is that as economic collapse continues or accelerates, those structures will fall into more disrepair. There's not going to be any money or anything running to fix those. So what you want to have is the change to a new paradigm, getting the old one out of the way, while there's still infrastructure left to start building something new. We have to survive the transition phase of human civilization, which I anticipate could last anywhere between 20 years. And oh my God, would that be fast and hard? You know, to 50 years or 100 years before some kind of stable civilization starts to emerge. You need to survive the transition phase. So don't panic. Don't freak out. Use your heads. Analyze your local situation where you live. Don't worry about rebuilding sewers. You're going to be able to get water for a few years. People say there's either oil or no oil. There's either food or no food. And people say, well, we're going to have food in the supermarkets on Tuesday and we're never going to see it again. That's not the way it's going to happen. As things break down, we will see specific shortages in specific areas for periods of days before it gets to the point where there's nothing left. So what you need to prepare for is not the end result, but you need to prepare to survive the transition. When people say, okay, I'm going to run for the hills. I'm going to go build a cabin. I'm going to buy 10 million cans of baked beans. Well, they're probably going to be the first to die. Number one, it's too late. If you don't know how to live off the land, and if you're not already on the land right now, don't even try to go, because you're going to fail miserably and you might be shot by the people who got there ahead of you.
You know, the one factor that you're not including in some of this is just sort of discounting human ingenuity. Or our ability to sort of problem solve?
Because my father was an Air Force aviator, combat veteran, he was very much trained in a military style of decision-making and analysis where it's motivated by life and death decisions, where you are trained how to think critically and respond critically in response to emergency. So I was trained at an early age in the skill of critical thinking. And maybe I have a gift for it, too. I believe there are some people who have a gift for critical thinking. And my own experience on the streets in South Central Los Angeles as a cop, there were quick decisions, sometimes decisions which changed people's lives or could end people's lives. And it gave me an ability to respond and think, to separate the ice cream from the bull. Probably one of the biggest impediments I removed to critical thinking was I stopped taking mainstream media seriously a long time ago.
But we were talking about human ingenuity.
No amount of technology and no amount of human ingenuity can possibly overturn the laws of physics, the laws which govern this planet. Those are intractable, immutable, real. And science has never been able to do that. Man's great arrogance, I believe, and one for which he's paying a price now, is to believe that mankind really could become God and even turn over and upset and revoke somehow the laws of the universe. I am a great advocate of buying and owning physical gold, not paper gold. You buy gold, you own it. When hyperinflation occurs after deflation here and all these trillions of dollars come back and we are wheeling wheelbarrows of $1,000 bills to buy a loaf of bread, the only thing people will accept for goods is going to be gold. Do whatever you can to re-insulate your house if you need to, if you have a house, if you have soil, you immediately get it off petrochemicals and start learning how to restore it. What I do in the yard where I'm renting, I'm mixing barbecue and wood ash, and then I go out and pee on everything, because then you get the root elements of ammonium nitrate that starts to bring the soil back. If you are dependent upon a cell phone, get a landline. All of the telecommunications companies that operate the satellites, the cell towers, the fiber optic cables, and all this stuff that makes your wonderful cell phone work are cutting back on maintenance as the stock market collapses, and we're going to see failures in cell phone service. A landline is a redundancy that can help you. Get books on first aid and holistic medicine. Moderate fresh water supply. The reasonable amount of food storage. You can't store enough to live on. What you need to store is seeds. Seeds that are not manufactured by Monsanto, that are not Franken seeds, that only work one time you plant them and then you gotta go buy more. You get good, organic, whole seeds and you store them. That could be a great currency in the future. unlike the Great Depression, this is a vastly different scenario. We do not have infinite resources left to be tapped. We don't have lots of land. We're at peak everything, all the commodities, everything else. And what they had in the 1930s that my grandparents told me about was the ability to grow food right where they live. And local food production is perhaps the most fundamental key to human survival in the collapse of industrialized civilization. We've had examples of what happens when oil disappears and how civilizations respond and what works and what doesn't. In 1991, the Soviet Union collapsed, and there were two nations that were absolutely and totally dependent upon Soviet oil for their survival because they had none, Cuba and North Korea. And what they did in response to that was completely opposite, and the proof, as they say, was in the pudding. North Korea was a rigid, hierarchical, top-down, Soviet-style bureaucratic regime where everything came from the central government, they managed everything, and North Korea starved. I mean, it was, in human terms, the suffering was amazing. All of a sudden, there's no oil, there's no natural gas, there's no fertilizer, cars don't run, trains don't run. You get to a point where you can run trains on some day and generate electricity on others, but you can't do both at the same time. But the Cuban government reverted to one of the purest forms of capitalism. It said, everybody start restoring the soil and grow food. You will grow food where you live. If you find any piece of arable land that's not being used, you occupy it and you start farming it and you start growing food right now. The Cuban government did everything it could to liberate local food growing. And what happened was, is after a very tough period, the Cuban people were eating better than they have ever had ever eaten because they were free of this whole agribiz, you know, Frankenfood nightmare. Everything was organic. And you had every square inch in Havana that had soil on rooftops or in flower boxes was growing food. And there was a degree of sustainability. Everything became organic. And all you had to do was separate the people from the way money worked and top-down control, explain to them, you grow it where you eat it and you're going to make it. And Cuba survived and thrived. And that's the essence of where everything is going to in the new human paradigm. Everything will be local. Jack London was one of my favorite writers and wrote about animals a lot. One thing you know about animals is that they all want to go home when they know that they're going to face death. They don't want to be in their tribe or their pack or whatever it is. They want to be on familiar ground. It's a natural animal instinct. In Dubai, the economic crash has hit so hard that Indians who were living and working in Dubai lost their jobs, and they just drove to the Dubai airport and abandoned their cars. And there was a story talking about all the cars that were abandoned as these Indians caught a one-way ticket home to go home. And it's happening in Britain, too. You have lots of Poles and Eastern Europeans who were the latecomers into EU fleeing Britain to go home. Now, in some areas, and certainly in the Southern California basin with 13, 14 million people and a four-day food supply, it's clear that people are going to migrate out of this area because it's not sustainable. We get most of our water from Northern California. That's a problem. We get a lot of our electricity from Hoover Dam out in Las Vegas. Phoenix, for God's sake, Las Vegas. Those people have to worry about where to go and community is what will save us. You're going to have to do it in conjunction with your neighbors and your family and the people around you. You will fail as a rugged individual. You will survive as a member of a tribe or a family. I have emotion about this. I'm losing it. We have waited for so long for somebody to listen to us. When the mainstream press and the government says nobody could have predicted this, they're lying through their teeth. We all saw exactly what was going to happen and how it was going to happen and remarkably when it was going to happen. None of us expected the collapse to be as severe as it's proving to be or as fast as it's proving to be. But we've been screaming for years and we've been watching everything we said come to pass and we have felt so angry. There was a psychiatrist, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who talked about the five stages of grief. And when you're hit with an overwhelming, life-changing situation, the first is denial. This can't possibly happen. It's not true. It's not happening. And you stay in denial and you fight to stay in denial. Then comes anger. I really believe that mankind is now entering just barely. It has just barely crossed the threshold of the anger phase. We have to get through the anger phase, and how we get through that anger phase is going to be critical. The way we're going under current government and monetary rule, the only kind of anger that's going to be produced is the destructive kind, born of absolute frustration and bitterness that nothing that's being sold to us as being a solution is making us feel any goddamn better. Then, of course, after that, you know, we have the bargaining. Well, the bargaining is kind of going on now, too. Maybe I could have done something different. Maybe I should have thought of that. Maybe if I do this now, it won't be different. Then you go through the bargaining and you finally get to a place of depression where it's really starting to sink in. And these are all emotional stages that one goes through, whether they're an individual or a culture or a civilization. And the final stage is acceptance. And it's really only when people reach the point of acceptance that you can find those people who are like part of the ones on the Titanic saying, okay, show us how to build a lifeboat. I don't do debates anymore. And the reason why I don't do debates anymore is because I don't have to. At some point, you have to acknowledge the fact that what I've been writing about and what I've been saying is actually happening all around us. So why do I need to debate anything? Why does the peak oil movement, why does the sustainability movement need to debate anything? Everything that we said was going to happen is taking place right now. Every aspect of human existence is on the table. As far as political parties go, they're all anachronisms. They're all products of centuries gone by. The human race now is only going to be concerned not with an ideology, but what allows them to survive. Capitalism, socialism, and communism are all terms that need to be tossed in the trash can immediately because all of them were created on the assumption of infinite resources. Not one of those ideologies that are now dead dinosaurs, archaic fossils, and no longer relevant to our way of life, not one of them recognizes that there must be a balance between growth and the resources and the planet. So forget the idea that you can have as much as you want, because until mankind surrenders to the fact that it lives on a finite planet and it must have balance with that planet, with the planet's resources, with the animal life and all the other life, there can be no happiness for anything. Anything. It's all about getting balance back. And who sold me the idea that it was my destiny to grow? Nothing grows forever. There's no such thing as infinite growth. It's not possible. Look around at everything you see around you that's living. There is a cycle. Birth, growth, maturation, decline, and death. The challenge being faced by the human race now is either evolve or perish, either grow up or die. God doesn't care. God's not going to play babysitter for us. The challenge is either you grow up and mature, change your minds in the way you think, or you're going to perish. Everything is on the table now. God is on the table. Every religion in the world is on the table now. They'll all be measured as standards by this is reality and this is what the religion says. And every religion in the world is going to be under huge microscope. This is going to be the greatest age of evolution and human thinking that's ever taken place. You walk towards your fear, you embrace your fear, you don't try to hedge it. That a part of real living as a human being, as a spiritual being, is to embrace and encompass your fear, your love, and not run away from anything, because that's the life experience. And it's in that richness that I think we find the most beautiful art, the most beautiful music. We find the richness of what the human soul can offer. And I see all that richness buried under such bull.
Can you talk about your own spirituality? You know, you talk about a lot of different religions. How do you define your own spirituality?
I quote a Christian Saint Timothy, and I find it to be true what he said, that the love of money is the root of all evil. That's the end result of my spiritual intellectual quest. It is the end. It is a fundamental truth that I have verified through 3 decades of empirical, investigative, legal, academic research, trying to answer some fundamental questions about human existence and why we behave the way we do, why we think the way we do, why we act the way we do. The love of money is the root of all evil, and it is the love of money which has the potential to exterminate, to render extinct the entire human race.
Michael Ruppert. Those words were from a 2009 documentary about him called Collapse, directed by Chris Smith. I particularly liked Ruppert's discussion of North Korea and Cuba. These 2 countries responded in different ways to a catastrophic oil shortage. North Korea made no structural changes and starved. Cuba went low-tech and local and organic and did very well indeed. Which way will America go? I'll just say, let's not leave the decision to Monsanto. Thanks for listening to New World Notes. Check out our archive of shows at newworldnotes.blogspot.com. newworldnotes.blogspot.com. From Darkest Connecticut, this is Kenneth Doust, advising illegitimi non carborundum, support your local farmer, pay attention to the profits, that's P-H-E-T-S, and please tune in again next week. Ciao.